What's up? Welcome to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of the voices, Tim Mason. Here with me is Patrick Murphy.
I am joining you as always, Tim Mason. I'm not going to say Rick's line because he's only gone for like 1 week, I think. Or maybe more, but who knows? If he's not back next week, then I'll say the line.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. This week, besides our dear listening audience, is we don't have Ricky D, so maybe we should replace him with Isaac B?
There we go. Good to be here, guys. Always a pleasure.
So, Isaac, thanks again for being now our most consistent guest host. You're scooting on up into the ranks of... I feel like this show has such an interesting history with hosts. I don't remember who... Like, Patrick, you were a main host, and then you were a guest host, and then you were a main host again?
No, what happened was... Well, okay, so what happened was I was, like, in Isaac's position. I was lobbying really hard to get on the website, though, or to get on the podcast, I remember, when I first joined... Well, this was back when we were on Sound on Site. And then I kind of, like, wormed my way into main host. Because it was you and Rick and Aaron, and I was kind of trying to get on as much as possible, and... You know, pushing really hard to get on as much as possible, and then I became main host. Then I left Goomba Stomp after we founded Goomba Stomp. Like a little while later, I left it, so I wasn't hosting at all. And then Rick one day contacted me and asked me to come back, and I was like, "Yeah, that sounds good. I'll come back."
it's been a fun ride.
The grass wasn't greener on the other side. Goomba Stomp, it turns out, it does have the green grass.
I mean. You have to wonder if there's something just kind of great and welcoming and sort of like an indie game our site sort of feels. Is it because of Ricky and just the incredible work that everyone puts in? Of course, like that's part of it. Or is it because we've got Nintendo at our heart? The grass is always greener. I always wonder.
I think it's both. I mean, there are other Nintendo sites out there, and obviously we're not a strictly Nintendo site anymore like we used to be a few years ago, but... I think it's a little bit of both. Rick is a huge part of that. So for anybody who doesn't know, he has run this show for a long time, and he's created an atmosphere that is very... I enjoy it quite a bit. I haven't found anything else quite like it. So
Yeah, it definitely feels like a kind of like a family behind the scenes, and that's something.
Yeah, kind of like Fast and the Furious, if you will.
So wait, and... are you Hobbs or are you? What is the other guy's name?
If we're picking who we want to be, then I'll go for Hobbs. That's fine.
I'm Paul Walker. I like basically I died like a couple of years ago, and then they brought me back to life using CGI. That's what I am.
Too soon.
We can't. Yeah. Why don't we get this show on the road though?
That was our random movie reference for the podcast.
I'm sure
I promise I won't bring out any Orson Welles things. Or...
Well, plenty of TV references to come because this week we are talking about the Nindy Direct that just happened earlier this month. And some unexpected Nindies coming to the Switch. Looks really, really cool. The lineup is incredibly exciting if you're into indie games. And if you're not, then maybe you should be. Because again, the game is
great. Isaac.
But... that was just a short jab. We'll get to it, I'm sure. But we also have some games that we want to talk about that we want to review when we have the chance, a little bit of a quieter week. I shouldn't say quieter. We had a Nintendo Direct, which means that we have a lot to talk about. Let's get going. Patrick, you had a game you wanted to review on the site. Let's just get into it.
Yeah, there's a new puzzle game that I think... quite a few people are talking about called Baba Is You, and I reviewed that for the site. You can go check out my review on GoombaStomp.com. So Baba Is You is a great premise. So puzzle games are always about bending the rules, right? Like even if we can't necessarily see that outright, it's all about manipulating the environment around you in order to solve the puzzle. So in my review, I bring up games like The Swapper, where you're cloning yourself essentially over and over and over again, and sometimes sacrificing your own clone, which gets into some existential territory, in order to solve these puzzles. Or if you're Box Boy and you're creating boxes in order to manipulate the world around you or to break the rules, so to speak, right? So Baba Is You takes that concept of what puzzle games do and it makes it literal. So the rules of the world and the rules that govern the items in the world are on display in text. So the game is titled Baba Is You. Well, often a level will start, and one of the rules is Baba Is You. And Baba is like this little white rabbit thing, alien thing. I don't know what it is. It's Baba. That's all that matters.
Is it like supposed to be like a sheep or something?
I don't know what it is. There's no story to this game or anything. So, yeah, so Baba Is You means that you'll be controlling Baba. Now, then there also will be other rules, like maybe wall equals stop, or wall is stop, meaning you can't go through a wall. And water is sink, meaning if you try to cross a river in the stage, you will sink into the water and you'll have to restart or rewind. You can rewind in this game. So what this does, these rules, though, are displayed in text, and more often than not, they are movable. So you'll have the words water is sink, and you'll have the words Baba Is You, and you can actually move the word water over to where Baba Is You is, and you can push Baba out of the way and make it water is you. And now all of a sudden you're controlling the entire river, and you can move the whole river around. So you can manipulate the environment in that way. You can push the word stop away from wall, and now all of a sudden the wall isn't anything. The wall isn't stop anymore, so you can just walk right through the wall. It becomes just like any floor tile. So it's a really kind of clever way at sort of deconstructing, or at least making literal what people do in most puzzle games. And for a long time, it is pretty fun. I would say for the first few, a few hours, the game has lots of stages. It's like 200 stages, I think. Through the first 50 or 60, I would say, they keep them pretty focused, pretty small. There are, there's lots of different rules that they have, and there's some very clever ways that they make you think outside the box as to how you can possibly solve this problem. So a lot of times what you normally have to do is there's a win, right? So one of the rules is something is win, and usually that's a flag. So there'll be a flag located somewhere in the stage, and it'll say, and the rule will be flag is win. Well, you can actually change like wall, make the wall win. You can push the word wall over to win, and now all of a sudden wall is win, and now you can just walk into the wall and you'll beat the stage. There's in these early stages, there's lots of clever ways to get around things. It really feels like you're breaking the rules, and it really feels like you're creating your own solution, which is a very cool thing to have in a puzzle game, because so often puzzle games are just about getting through a maze. I like it essentially like you're just bumping your head, you're walking blindly through a maze, bumping into walls until you finally reach the end. That's a lot of puzzle games. They just want to get you from point A to point Z, and there's a specific path, and there are specific steps that you have to take in order to do that. Well, Baba Is You, the early stages, doesn't have that quite as much. It feels like there are possibly multiple paths to victory. It's just up to your creativity. So I really enjoyed those first 50 to 60 stages, and there's like this overworld and everything like that that you can access different themed levels, and there are many stages contained within those. After that, after about the 50 or 60 stage point, things start to get a little more complicated. And this is where I sort of fell out of love with Baba Is You. They start making conditions permanent. So early on, most of the conditions were not permanent. You could change almost everything about the stage. You could manipulate almost anything. But later on, I feel like they ran out of clever ideas because they revert back to just the old puzzle solving techniques. They make so many conditions permanent, so they still are displayed on the level, but they're positioned in ways that you can't possibly move them. So wall is stop will be behind a wall, like encased in wall. So you can never ever reach wall is stop in order to move it and make the wall anything other than a stopping object. I started to not like it when it did this. I feel like it kind of betrays the creativity that the early game shows, that the premise kind of promises you, and instead it turns it into a much more standard puzzle game where the only way they complicate this maze is by making it bigger. So there's just more moving parts, there's more rules, it feels actually more constricted, and it just feels like you're jumping through hoops in a lot of those later puzzles. Instead of being creative and coming up with solutions, you're just finding the path that the game makers set out for you. And that was a lot less interesting. And there were definitely levels where I looked into them and I saw the list of permanent conditions and I just thought, screw this. I mean, I don't even want to do this. I had to do it, but It's like, I don't even, it doesn't interest me. The game isn't nearly as interesting when that starts happening. Like, because those puzzles just feel more tedious. That being said, I still gave it an overall positive review. I think I gave it a 3 out of 5. I think those first few hours are pretty well spent, and it's certainly an interesting premise that I'd like to see them develop further, but keep it focused I'd like to see them not feel like they have to make these levels gigantic. Come up with clever puzzles, not big puzzles. Anybody can make a puzzle harder by making it longer. That's all those later stages are doing. I like the early ones when the puzzles were clever. They made you think differently about things instead of just making you jump through hoops. But anyway, that was my experience with Baba's U. It's a cute little puzzle game. I would say, like I say, for about the first 50 or 60 stages, it's definitely really creative. After that, you're just going to have to be a puzzle lover. I think any casual person can play those, you know, for a few hours and be really happy with it. After that, you're going to have to be a real puzzle nut in order to really enjoy it. I am a puzzle nut, and I still didn't enjoy it that much. I have found other puzzle games like Degrees of Separation, for instance, to be much more clever in their puzzles and more, because it's more focused. I don't like that tactic in puzzle games where it's like, oh, well, we'll just make it more complicated. That's not clever. That's anybody can do that.
Yeah, whereas bringing up one of our other favorite puzzle games from way earlier in the show, Box Boy and its sequels, that doesn't necessarily even get too much harder as it goes, because they're literally always throwing something new at you, mm-hmm. and it's so mechanically driven.
And the stages are always really small. It's not like you are required to perform a bunch of steps in order to solve Box Boy's puzzles. You're just required to come up with the solution right then and there. Like, what's the clever way to come up with the solution to overcome this obstacle? And then once you've done that, usually there's a checkpoint right after in its stages, and, you know, so then if the next one kills you, then you'll just go right back to that checkpoint.
Yeah.
So it's a really, that game is really focused, and it asks you to look at small little areas and say, how do I overcome this? It doesn't throw in a ton of moving parts because it doesn't need to. It has clever ideas. And Baba Is You has that for like the first 50 or 60 stages. I just think they made this game, they made it longer for whatever their reasons, but they didn't have any good ideas past those first 50, 60 stages, in my opinion.
Which is kind of a shame, because I feel like this game looks really cool and really unique.
And it is. And for those first 50 to 60 stages.
it's disappointing that I don't think I've ever seen a game so well encapsulated in a GIF. Like, you can literally just go see GIFs of this game, and it demonstrates that, like, shit, like Zelda block pushing words around to create new sentences with air quotes to change the rules of the game. And I like that idea so much. It's everything that, what was Typo Man? Everything that Typo Man should have been.
Typo Man was a solid 7 that, you know. Typo Man had its moments. I'm a defender of Typo Man. I would say Typo Man and Baba Is You are right along the same wavelength. I think that there's frustration in both because of potential. You see potential. And I think people are really gushing about those first 50 to 60 stages because they are really clever. And they really do feel fresh. It's, like I say, it's just later on, just be warned, the game turns much more into a standard jump through hoops puzzle game. It becomes much more tedious. And it throws away the creativity in the early stages was the freedom. And that's the GIFs or GIFs you always see, or memes or whatever. You're going to see the freedom aspect of it where they're changing stuff up, and that's really cool. Well, that kind of goes away. Like I said, there are stages later on where there's like 12 permanent conditions, and you read the list of them and you're like, oh my gosh, where'd the early freedom go? Where'd the idea of changing the rules go? So their idea of making something harder is making it so you can't change the rules anymore.
Sounds really frustrating to deal with.
Oh, it just takes away from the fun of the early part of the game. Again, though, I don't want to like dissuade people. This isn't bad. It's like, you can get a few hours out of this game of that real creativity. And if you are a huge puzzle fan, I'm sure that you can. There are going to be some people who really enjoy the second part of that game, or the next part of that game, for different reasons because of the difficulty. Obviously, those later stages are more difficult, but they're just not as creative. That's all.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like, as a general rule, if you can give more power to the player, if you give them the opportunity to break the game in a fun way, like, too often developers try to take that power away too soon.
Yes, they get scared.
And it's like, if it's not breaking anything and everyone's happy and everyone's on the same, it's like a level playing field, then like, just let us have at it. Let's break your game.
It's like those optional sequence breaks in like Metroid Zero Mission, where you can go out of order a little bit, the developers put in there. I always like it when they do stuff like that.
And it's cool when in a Mario game, like in Odyssey, they take away your hat at some points, you know, just to make you have to do it without the hat. But they don't do it for long, and it comes well after you've gotten used to the hat. So
Or even get to the top to certain places in Odyssey that you know you have to be really creative with your jumps to get to, but they have coins on top, so you know Nintendo is like, some people are going to get up here, let's put some coins here to reward them when they get up here. Yeah. I kind of like stuff like that. Yeah.
I should say that one of the interesting things, I don't know, I don't think this has gone live yet, but they did mention a possible level editor at some point for people to create their own levels, which could be very, very cool. If that does end up happening, and I'm sure people will come up with the usual troll levels like they did it for Mario Maker, where it's just like ridiculous. You just go through a door and you die, then you go through a different door and you die until you find your way to the end, right? Like those are the kind of puzzles people have come up with, and to me that's the kind of puzzle that the later stages of Baba U has. But I bet there will be a lot of people who come up with those very small, very focused stages that are very clever, so that may give the game some more replay value if and when that does come.
I still might check this out, but...
It's positive. Just be warned. Like, it will turn on you at one point.
And those are always like the trickiest reviews, right? Where it's like, oh, you could buy this.
Or, yeah.
I recommend it mostly for hardcore puzzle people, or if you're casual and you don't mind that the game will only maybe entertain you for, maybe 3 or 4 hours. If you're cool with that, if you're cool with dropping the money on a 3 to 4 hour game, puzzle game, which you could be, I mean, that's totally fine. Then I think, yeah, it's worth it. Because those first 3 to 4 hours are really, really cool. They're really imaginative, and they really feel fresh and clever. And they make you feel clever.
That's my question. So do you think if those first 3 to 4 hours are packaged by themselves at the price point this game's at, would it be better if it was just those levels? No extra, not the extra ones at the end that are frustrating, just the good levels.
I think, maybe not at this price point, because I think, what is the game, $14.99? I have to look that up, but I think it would have been better off as a smaller game, yes. I do believe that.
And if it was flipped the other way around, the frustration or the restriction was up front and then it got more free as the game went on, would that have been better too? Or
no.
Okay, that would have been worse.
Because those early levels really demonstrate the idea. The problem is that the levels later on...
it seems like they throw that out the window. Yeah.
They take away that idea, and that's what I didn't necessarily like. They take away that early freedom. Early on, you really feel like you're free to experiment and do whatever you want and come up with, like I said, multiple solutions to the game. And yeah, it's $15. So later on, you just don't feel like that. There aren't multiple solutions. Later on, they're basically putting you down a path, and you have to do it right. You have to discover the right way, quote unquote, to do the stage. Whereas early on, it feels like, well, shoot, I could make this rock go into the river. And that creates a gap, and then I can control Baba, make rock be push. If you can push is another, descriptor. So rock is push the rock into the river, it sinks into the river. That creates a gap in the river. Now I walk Baba through to the flag. Or I could make river me, and I could just move the entire river over to the flag. Those are the kind of cool things where it feels like you are making your own solution. You're coming up with your own ideas.
The more you talk about this game, the more it reminds you of like an opposite of a case, the opposite of a game like, Final Fantasy 13, where you start off where it's all restricted, everything for 20 hours, and then it opens up into, open world, right? Or at least relatively open area. So it kind of reminds you of the opposite of that, where it's all the openness and fun is at the beginning, and then you get to this wall of frustration later in the game.
Yeah, and that's just a product of the genres being different. I think when you're talking about a massive role-playing game, you want to keep focus small early on so that you don't overwhelm the player with choices, and I can see why they're being strict there. Whereas this, they need to gradually introduce you to the concepts first, so it's got to be small and focused. And most puzzle games do start out, though. I mean, they always start with very simple concepts, and they demonstrate those concepts with very easy puzzles, and then they add twists to those puzzles later on as things go, and they get more clever and clever. And I, for anybody who hasn't played, like, The Swapper, and that was available on Wii U, that's where I played it. That is a perfect example of a puzzle game that is just comes up with brilliant puzzles, all located within room. They don't require, you know, 20 steps in order to, you know, 20 of the correct steps in order to solve them. You just have to look at the room and figure out what are they trying to get me to realize here. With my tools, you have limited tools. There are only so many things you can do. How am I supposed to get to this little orb that I'm collecting? And that to me is an ideal way to design a puzzle game. It's about coming up with twists on concepts and not just simply tacking on extra moves that you have to do, making something longer and longer and longer. Like I say, like anybody can make a maze, and anybody can make a maze harder by making it bigger. So that's not clever. That's just adding on extra steps. You know, there's getting from A to C. That's pretty easy. Getting from A to Z is more difficult, and it required no creativity. I just had to add letters. That's all.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like they... Early on, the creativity's there. It's very focused, and you will be looking at a screen, and you're like, what are they asking me to do here? And so you experiment a little, and then maybe you find the solution, and that's great. Later on, it's like, well, I know what they're trying to get me to do. They're just trying to get me to run through a bunch of steps in order to, I don't know. I mean, that is what puzzle games do, and it's just that I didn't feel particularly compelled once it got to that stage.
That didn't go so well, but what happens when you take a writer at Goomba Stomp and you force them to do something they don't want to do, which is play a lot of indie games? Isaac, what are you doing to yourself?
I don't know. I blame Patrick for it. No, I'm just joking. But he suggested that I play more indie games. And I played my favorite, I think I mentioned this podcast a couple weeks ago. I played some indie games, played some Stardew Valley before, and some others like that, but mainly just the highlights of the highlights, right? Just the cream of the crop. I wasn't buying anything that I wasn't 100% sure about was going to be a 9 or 10 experience. So I've kind of thrown that out the window the last couple of weeks and been reviewing a couple of, like, I don't want to call them no-name indies, but just some lesser indies on Nintendo eShop. And so this past week, I got a review code for Space War Arena on Switch, which is a real-time strategy game on Switch, which you don't often see console real-time strategy games, and I think this game demonstrates why you don't often see real-time strategy games on console. And it's not because the controls are bad for this game or anything. It's just because this is probably the most frustrating game I've played in years. So I can't think of a time where I felt more frustrated playing a strategy game, because, you know, I play a lot of strategy games. I grew up playing like Master of Orion 3 with my dad, which is a kind of like a spreadsheet simulator in terms of all the complicated stuff behind it or whatever. But playing, you know, Master of Orion 2, I've been playing a lot of Hearts of Iron 4 recently, which is a World War II strategy game.
Can I stop really quick? You called it a spreadsheet simulator. What is that? That's okay, a game?
So basically in a lot of these complicated, like Master of Orion 3 was like, it's like an intergalactic. You're managing lots of planets. Each planet has its own tax rate, its own ecology, all this micromanagement stuff. And so there's a lot of spreadsheet data and stuff. There's not actually much gameplay you see. It's just a lot of menus. That sort of interaction is what I really like. I really like that sort of getting in the nitty-gritty of stuff.
You people and your Dark Souls inventories, and you're having fun with it.
Do you like playing Quicken?
Inventory in RPGs is a different thing. That can be frustrating. But in terms of games like that, where you can micromanage everything down to populations on planets and stuff, I think that's fun, because you can get this sort of granularity that's really interesting and can really dig into it. Like I said, Hearts of Iron 4 is kind of like that. It's really complicated. It's probably the most complicated game I've ever played. You go in, it's a lot of menus and stuff. I like those sort of games because you have the control to do anything you want to do. And this game doesn't have any of that because there is very little control in this game. So basically the point of this game is you've got two bases beside each other in space. That's why it's called Space War Arena. And the base on the left is yours and the base on the right is the enemy's. And the point is you gain this basically not currency, but like this ability called warp, right? And you got points of warp that you spend to buy units. And as soon as you place a unit, it goes across the map and attacks the enemy base. Sounds pretty
automatically?
Simple. Automatically. So it sounds simple, right?
Huh, yeah.
Well, the AI in this game is terrible. And so you can't control these units at all, which is weird because it's a real-time strategy game, right? You used to be able to control your units. You play StarCraft or anything like that. You know, you can micro your units, do them whatever you want them to do, have all sorts of hotkeys, have everything bound. Well, not in this game. You put the unit down, it is going to the enemy base no matter what. I mean, it will not turn around. It will not do anything. It is going to the enemy base. And if someone, if it comes across another enemy ship on the way there, it'll stop in its tracks and fire at it. And as you can see, this can lead to all sorts of problems. So, for example, there's these ships called Crusaders that have these frontal shields, and they'll go to they're really good units. But the problem is when they go to the enemy base and an enemy ship passes them, they will turn around, expose their flank to the enemy base, and just get completely obliterated because it's their non-shielded side. Your fighters,
it's like the phalanx of Greece, just all facing inward, looking at one another.
It's terrible. I mean, your fighters, instead of protecting, you know, instead of grouping around your home base and protecting them, they'll just go do suicide runs on the enemy base and get completely destroyed by their auto turrets. They'll just send wave and wave after fighters to just go in there and get destroyed. And if you put a building down, so like a building is like a carrier base or something like that, it automatically dies after a certain period of time, which is a big pain. Because your normal ships won't automatically die, but these you're putting these carrier bases down and they automatically die after a certain number of seconds is really frustrating. But that's not the most frustrating thing. It's this game's difficulty is just absolutely insane. So I was playing through it just so frustrated at it because a lot of the screenshots for this game make it look like, you know, it's pretty easy. There's some videos of it. It's like, wow, this doesn't look hard at all. Well, these screenshots are using like in-game stacks in-game stats. To fight some early game bosses. And so it's like completely misleading in terms of upgrades. And the main reason behind why this is so frustrating is that your units do not gain experience from doing the main story missions. They only gain experience by doing side missions. And so that's the only way you can level them up, which is super frustrating when you get stuck on a mission. And so you have to go off to this other mission that's just as hard to beat that gives you experience. It only gives you about 3% of a level every time you beat it for the units that you used, which is a very small amount. Although one time it gave me 25% for some reason. I have no idea why. I wasn't questioning it then.
Can you think of any reason why some of these choices might have been made? Like the idea behind it?
The idea behind it, I think, is just to be kind of like, it reminds me of a phone game. So like, you know, if you were playing this on your phone, you just send the units across, no need to sit there and control them. It's supposed to be kind of like a simpler version of a real-time strategy game, right, where there's no mouse, so it'd be harder to select units and stuff. Mm-hmm. I can see that. He kind of, the creator, let's see if I can get his name right, Ed Annunziata, who's actually the creator of Echo the Dolphin, had mentioned something about on Twitter, like this is kind of like a lane battler, like those sorts of games, mm-hmm. Except for the fact there's no lanes. So units just wander all across the screen and all sorts of crazy stuff. I would guess that the reason the levels are so hard is because there's not many of them. There's maybe 16 or 18 levels. And maybe they wanted you to squeeze as much as you can out this game because it's a $15 game. And honestly, there's not much to it. There's these little side missions called Evolve missions. There's multiplayer between two people. And then there's these like 20 story missions. And that's it for $15.
Now, the multiplayer sounds like at least if you could get more your money's worth out of that if you dug the multiplayer at least.
Yeah, I did not get to try that out because I was looking at this from a single-player perspective, but it's what he told me in the creator comment on my review, which I wrote on Goomba Stomp, of this game, and he said, try out the multiplayer when you can. He's been posting on Twitter a lot about that, taking a switch around places and doing that. That part seems like it could be fun because then it doesn't matter, right? The AI is not, like, really good on the, like, you know, if you're playing against somebody else, it doesn't matter if you win or lose or whatever. When you're trying to get to the end of this game, like I was doing when I was reviewing, it is just so frustrating running into that wall over and over again. There's one level I played for, no kidding, about an hour. And these are 7-minute levels, right? I played it for an hour, and I could not get through it. And so finally, I just had to sit back, take a break, and come back to it the next day because It was just so frustrating. But out of that, there is a little bit of a shining light in this game, and that is, it is very fulfilling when you do beat something. When everything is, the game feels like it's stacked against you. The AI is terrible. You can't control what units you put down when, right? I forgot to mention this. All the units you get are random. So they randomly pick at the beginning. Yes.
What?
Yes, at the beginning of the match, so you pick 8 out of 20-some units that you want to use. But at the beginning of the match, it picks 4 randomly that you get first. And so you could get, like, your 4 worst units first, and then you have to use those. You don't get the other units until you spend the units you're using right now. So if I get, like, a carrier base, a missile, and another missile, I have to use one of those. And then the next one, it tells you what it is, but it's random. And so you could get, like, another unit you don't need. So if I want to start off really strong with a quick rush with a carrier, some crusaders, and, like, a couple missiles, I can't do that. I can't set that up. And there's no way to pause the game to figure out what you're supposed to do next. Now, I understand that it makes sense. You can't really pause in StarCraft or anything like that. But in a console game like this, it would have been really helpful to just be able to pause the action for a second and just, or slow it down and just be able to think, because you can't do that at all. So it's just reacting to pure instinct to a lot of this.
Not to, like, cheese anything, but this is on the Switch. What happens if you press the home button?
Well, you can pause it then. I mean, you could pause it physically, but you can't, like, pause the game action and be able to look at the screen.
And look at the situation.
Yeah. So look at the screen at the same time and be like, okay, what I need to do here? Well, he's got this carrier. I need to put this here or whatever. And that's just really not user-friendly. And so it can be really, really frustrating to play it. And that's just what I come back to every time I think about this game. It's just the pure frustration of playing it. Now, it's very fulfilling when you do finish it, because you feel like you just conquered, like, the worst troll level in Mario Maker or something, right? You're just like, oh my gosh, I did it. I survived it. But feeling that way for 20 levels is not much fun, especially because of the fact that if you time out in this game, you automatically lose, which is just so frustrating. So one time I had the enemy down pretty low, about 300 out of 2,000 health, and it timed out. And that's just, there should be something.
No. Yeah. No, that would have been the end of the game for me right there, by the way.
If I didn't have to review this, the 5th level would have been the end of the game for me on this. I mean, it was just that. The enemy AI is maddeningly inconsistent. So what would happen, I would run my head against the wall, enemy AI, for five times I would try, right? Each time losing, because he just kept putting more units out than me. Somehow, some way, he just built to put more units out. And then that 6th time, he just completely fall apart. Like, I'd rush him and win the match in 30 to 45 seconds. So I have no idea what's going on with the game's programming, that you'll hit your head against the wall a couple times. It'll be really hard, and then just, it seems like the AI gives up, like, the 6th or 7th time you try. You can exit out, come back, and it just seems like it's super easy sometimes. I don't know if that's intentional, like, okay, he's tried this enough times to make it easier, but it's really doesn't feel fulfilling when it's like, okay, well, this was hard, and it felt like it was cheap and hard, but now, well, it's cheap and easy. So that's kind of...
They gave it to you. Isaac, we're going to find you a good indie game at some point here.
The one I have coming up this week, I'm very confident is going to be really good. I've really enjoyed playing it so far.
Okay, all right. I mean, difficulty is, like, one of those things that's weird because, you know, obligatory Hollow Knight reference. Hollow Knight is a hard game. I think it's pretty acknowledged that it's a hard game, and boss fights can take you several tries. There were a couple bosses in that game where... My God, I had no idea how I was going to do it. When I finally conquered them, it felt amazing and like utter relief. Now, they're mostly optional. A lot of the bosses in Hollow Knight are optional, but if you want to get all the upgrades and stuff, you got to fight them. But at no point did I feel like I wanted to give up. I never felt frustrated. I just felt like I hadn't learned the pattern of the enemy yet. What you're talking about is something completely random.
Yeah.
And that is totally different, because I feel like if it's just on you, the player, to learn the pattern of this enemy, that is on you. And that makes it fair. That makes difficulty feel fair. And you want to keep trying, you get better, and then you eventually beat it. And then after that, you can beat it anytime you want to. There was a boss that I, like, early on that I died, like, 15 times to. I can go back and do that thing in my sleep now. It would be no problem. Once I learned it, it's over with. Like, so that to me is good difficulty in games.
Yeah.
Makes you want to persist.
There is no skill to build here. Like, right? I mean, you don't control your units at all. And so the only skill you can build here is patience. Yeah. So you're gonna need a lot of it if you try to play this game.
We're gonna. All right. Well, I look forward to next week's. Then I'd like to hear which one you ended up liking. Anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of indie games and liking them, the future is looking pretty bright on the Switch right now. We got an Indie Direct with a bunch of new games, some very, very unexpected. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, the Indie Direct. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to N-Express. We're at our final segment, a discussion of the Nitty Direct. And can we just start off with how they started this thing? Talk about just
so weird
swinging. I didn't know this was going to happen. There was a rumor. But, you know, rumors are rumors. And sometimes they're just fantasies. But nope, totally true. Cuphead is coming to the Switch. And part of me wants to buy it again. I have an Xbox. I, for a long time, was the solo Xbox editor at Goomba Stomp, which meant that sometimes I wrote Xbox articles and someone else edited them. Because no one has an Xbox on our site.
That's right, except for Rick does. Yeah, well, there's a couple people now that do.
There's a couple people
now.
Yeah,
back then, you were like the only one, though. I think Rick bought... Did he buy Xbox for Cuphead? I feel like he bought his Xbox for Cuphead.
Yeah, I think he said that, didn't he?
I feel like that's true, but maybe he'll come on and tell us that we're wrong once he listens to this.
Marty, a friend of the show, also said that he almost bought an Xbox for Cuphead. And Cuphead was one of the games that I absolutely just adored last year. Was that last year?
Yeah.
Let's say last year.
Was it 2017?
Was it 2 years? You guys, this stuff gets harder the longer you do it. It all blurs. Anyway.
2017 and on Xbox One.
Okay, so there you go. 2 years. Insane. Cuphead, visually, just the best. Straight feels like an old Mickey Mouse cartoon from when the mouse was born. And then, of course, that super sweet jazzy soundtrack. It doesn't get much better than that. People complained about the platforming. Personally, I thought it was really fun. I really liked those levels.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Tim, like, what players should be excited about this? Because from what I understand, Cuphead is an insanely difficult platformer.
Yeah, so the platforming's really, really hard. Think platforming through a bullet hell game.
Oh, wow.
You've like just convinced me not to buy Cuphead.
No, okay, but then think about, like, as someone who really enjoys Hollow Knight and mastery over a boss and their patterns, that's where Cuphead really, really shines. And I think the platforming, you can get by, and I don't think it's quite as bad. There's no real consequence to just trying over and over and over again. And like with Hollow Knight, you master these things. It's the boss fights that I think are even harder, but they're so well designed that it's all about that mastery, that learning to read this guy so that he can't touch you. And that there's something to be said about that. The gameplay is really, really fun. I like the concept of having a little finger gun that you're shooting all the time.
Yeah.
There's so much that's just so charming about this, and I think it'll be right at home on the Switch. That's what I've been saying about Cuphead for a long time, said it should have been on the Switch all along, and now it's coming. And if you don't have an Xbox and you like hard games, just buy it. Just buy it.
It's also on PC too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, with Microsoft, they're blurring that line more and more, so if it's on Xbox, most things are on PC also now. Mm-hmm. I just say Xbox. It's all one thing.
Yeah, the Microsoft Game Store on PC.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, Isaac, if you could, seeing as you don't play indies, but you did see this direct, if there was one game that stood out for you that you would get, if you had to pick one that you would be interested in, which one would it be?
If I had to get one, it'd probably be Cadence of Hyrule, because I kind of like the way that looked, because I didn't play Crypt of the NecroDancer or anything. I never had even watched anything about it. But, I mean, like I said, not much on indies, but this is something related to Nintendo, right? So it's a Zelda game, and it's something of a Zelda game. And it looked kind of interesting. I probably never will play it, but, I mean, like, it would be one of those I probably wouldn't mind, because gotten rid of it, like it's got an aesthetic that I kind of like, and it's not like it, this is the game. If I were to give a chance, give the Crypt of the Necrodancer style a chance, this would be the game to do it with, because I probably wouldn't do that with the original. That's about it though, because like I said, I'm not big into indies, but I saw this and it just caught my eye. I was like, okay, this is definitely something I could consider though.
Their last two directs, they've ended with like a Zelda surprise. You know, this one, Cadence of Hyrule, like, doesn't appeal to me in the slightest. It might be official Zelda canon, but I detest rhythm games. I shouldn't say
you do.
Detest. I just don't care.
Why?
About that
I'm
genre.
Curious.
Probably because I have no rhythm. I don't know. I don't dance.
I mean, neither do I, but I love them. Like, if you like the Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy games on 3DS,
yeah.
Some of the best rhythm games I've played.
I don't like rhythm games. I don't like having to go. I've never liked sequences in games where you've got to be in step with rhythm. Like, I played Wander Song and some of the boss. And Wander Song doesn't penalize you, really. Like, it's super easy. But I don't care for all of that stuff. It just doesn't appeal to me in some way.
I got you.
I'm not knocking it, like, for anybody that does. I'm just saying it doesn't appeal to me. For whatever reason, the gameplay, I've tried them a couple of times, just like I don't like Endless Runners. To me,
I get that.
That whole, because Endless Runners are kind of like just being in a rhythm, right? I like to stop, look at my surroundings, and analyze stuff. I guess that's the joy that I get from video games. So, you know, if I'm playing something like Hollow Knight, you know, it is a Metroidvania, so you're a lot of time you're wandering, right? And you're analyzing your situation. You're looking at, like, how do I get over there? What tools do I need to get over there? Or, you know, okay, there's fast-paced action, so there's some platforming too. But, you know, and for stuff like Mario games, I like looking at the situation, analyzing it, and then figuring out how I want to approach it. But with rhythm games, I feel like you're doing it along with the beat, and that's pretty much what you're doing. So for me, that there isn't a lot of like stopping, taking time, all that kind of stuff. And that's what I, you know, in puzzle games, I like to look at a situation and I like to analyze it and come up with a solution.
That makes sense. Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite. Like with Mario games, I hold right and I run and I just jump my way through it, even if it's the first time through the level.
Really?
I'm sprinting through the level.
My Mario is just like he's like dipping his toe in the water. I wonder what this feels like.
And same thing with rhythm games. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy games on 3DS. They're really fun, like the sort of quick action. And just the you get inside of this zone, right, when you're playing them. You just hit those buttons and you get in the groove of the music. Elite Beat Agents on the DS was really good. One of those, right. Probably one of the best rhythm games I've played. But I completely understand. They really are like a twitch sort of thing. And if you don't have any if you don't get in the zone with them, they're almost impossible to play. Mm-hmm. So...
Tim, what about you as far as Cadence of Hyrule goes?
So I'm incredibly curious. I'm somewhere in between you guys. I don't love rhythm games. I have a pretty good sense of rhythm, having grown up playing instruments all my life. I just don't think it's like it makes for that fun of gameplay a lot of the time. But the Necrodancer was kind of cool. I played it at PAX or E3 one year. I don't remember which. But that was my one experience with it. I never bought it. Just because, again, like, rhythm games, I can take them or leave them. But you make it Zelda, and I'm immediately all about it. So I'm really curious how this is going to play. Crypt of the Necrodancer is rhythm action adventure, which does give it a leg up on. It's not just a rhythm game. You know, it's got a little bit more to it. You're still in that world. You're going to be in Hyrule in this case. And I think that this can work. It's going to be a really, really interesting experiment. But I want to support it, if only to send the message to Nintendo that, like, let's see what else people can come up with for some of your franchises. Is this going to make an impact on The Legend of Zelda? No. Notice it's not named The Legend of Zelda at all.
Yeah.
But I love that they're doing this. It's the kind of the same. They've been doing this a lot lately, which is giving third parties, and in this case an indie developer, like their licenses. You know, Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle was one of the best games of the Switch's first year. So,
oh, man, I can't stop raving about that game.
Yeah, I mean, I like that they're experimenting and letting other people try out their IP and, you know, apply it to something different, especially when it's something that they themselves probably wouldn't make, like a, you know, a strategy game, a turn-based strategy game, or a rhythm-based game. So I like the thought behind it. It's just not for me, that's all.
Yeah, I understand. But if buying this helps Nintendo make a Nintendo rhythm game with all the songs from Nintendo's history, yeah, definitely I would buy it, because I would love to see a theater rhythm style Nintendo rhythm game. There's just so much music there.
I think you raise a good point. I think that this is a must buy just to hear the score remix Zelda songs.
Yeah,
I think there's I have to buy that. So I'm really, really curious about this. I think it was a really cool way to end. They were really doing a convincing job of wrapping it up. So I was like, oh, good show. But then this came out and I was like, wow, that's really, really cool. So I can't wait for that. I can't wait for more firm information about like when it comes out. But there were some other really, really cool looking games. I don't think we need to go over all of them, because some of them I just had no interest in. I'm going to be brutally honest and say some of these just looked like indie games that I will never bother even looking at ever again. But some of them looked really cool and really fun.
Honestly, most of them, to me, most of them looked very forgettable to me. Like, I doubt I'll pick... There's really probably only one game in this group that I had any interest in picking up. And I'm curious to watch it, because I think it's doing something different. There was just a lot of standard indie stuff in this. But I thought that Red Lantern looked super interesting. Like a dog sled game? And where you're stuck, like, surviving out in the Alaskan, Canadian wilderness, trying to do the Iditarod? That looked really appealing. And I know people were talking about the dog deaths. Yeah. I was like, whoa, this is super brutal for Nintendo Direct. They're killing sled dogs. Like, whoa. I actually liked that dark turn that it takes. Like, that made it seem really survival oriented. Like, you have to protect your dogs, because otherwise you won't be able to propel your sled anymore. To me, that idea of dog sledding, the isolation, being out there in the wilderness, survival, I don't know. I grew up in Minnesota, so we watched movies like, you know, what was that one with Chris O'Donnell? No, I can't remember it, where he goes on a dog sled race. But,
you're thinking of Balto.
Balto
is
Balto,
a
the cartoon.
Childhood classic.
No. But it has that, like, kind of that Jack London feel. Like, there could be some gritty survival out in the wintry lands, and bears and wolves and who knows what's going on there. I like the idea of that. So to me, this game is on my radar now. Like, Red Lantern is definitely like that. That's the only one that really piqued my interest and thought, "Whoa, okay, I got to pay attention to this."
So I feel. That's cool that you're into it. I thought it looked like one of the more boring, semi-pretentious sort of.
I dislike the narration, and I'm sorry to the creator if she happens to be listening, but I did not like the writing behind this necessarily. It's not the stuff that was the dialogue that was on. Yes, the pretentiousness in the jokes. Oh God, the lines. Well, look, you know my. Everybody knows my opinion on video game writing and stories. I think it's generally terrible, and this is a perfect example of that. But I love the concept and the gameplay premise. I really do like that.
Yeah. So, personally, I was more into my friend Pedro from Devolver.
Oh, yeah.
They're calling it a full-throttle gun ballet. Which, yeah, I get it. It's kind of got that slow motion Matrix sort of mechanic where you can slow things down,
and
take your shots, and yeah, you're literally twisting and turning midair to avoid these things as you're taking out enemies. And that kind of, I'm a Devil May Cry fan. I like the style. It's the action and the gore. So I just thought this was fun. I thought this one looked really, really cool. And, you know, it's not about sledding, it's about guns. So,
hey, I'm in Minnesota. I care about sledding.
You got guns and bananas, correct?
And a banana. Bananas,
yeah.
I thought, okay, so my first instinct was, wow, that's kind of cool. Then I wondered how, long will it take before that dancing around just becomes, before you get desensitized to it and it's not cool anymore? And will they have clever enough combat in order to take over once just sort of the cool visuals of your guy flipping through the air and shooting his guns as he's falling
yeah.
down?
Yeah.
Like,
and
will
if it's...
It is gonna end. That coolness is gonna stop at some point, and I wonder if they'll be able to pick it up with the gameplay.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There are some games that manage to stay pretty consistently cool the whole way through with just their kind of core mechanic, like Mr. Shifty. It's mm-hmm. kind of just one idea, but in a bunch of settings, and I loved it the whole way through. And it was just because it's like, oh, this is cool and fun to play. And I kind of get a similar vibe yeah. from this.
You're right. That could be the case. It could be very, very fun to play.
It could be one of those games that's just like, you're too OP and it's boring. You just never know, mm-hmm. honestly. One of the other ones that I thought looked pretty cool was very kind of similar, Katana Zero.
Yes.
Which is, again, another side-scrolling, semi-Castlevania-looking. You know, it looked kind of like
The
Mega
Messenger,
Man.
Kind of.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. But you're a cool assassin.
Yes. It was cool weird. This is the kind of weird game that only indie people do, where it's like you're this ninja assassin and you're murdering all these people and you can die in one hit, so that tells you obviously right off the bat it's going to be fairly difficult, like the old Contra games. But then you go see a therapist afterwards, which
yeah.
I'm like, what? I love that kind of thing. That concept, I was like, whoa, I wonder if they'll explore the therapist angle a lot.
Well, like, yeah. Reading the game's rate, the rating's already out, it comes out in April, so
it's super M rating.
Yeah, it's got like drug use, violence, language, and it's like, well, clearly there's more of a human element here than... Yeah. What was really shown off
when you said the thing when you said the thing about the therapist reminded me of that movie Leon or The Professional.
Yes.
Where he has that plant he takes care of.
Yes, exactly. Good. Look at Isaac dropping the movie references now.
Hey, that was a good movie. I like that movie.
It was good. Young Natalie Portman.
Yeah, this is crazy. For Star Wars ruined her, but we'll move on.
She's a better actress now. Annihilation.
She got her Academy Award after that.
Did she really?
Everybody okay. check out Annihilation, best sci-fi movie of the last, at least the last 5-10 years. Anyway.
Also, Black Swan.
I was surprised you didn't say the best sci-fi movie was made like 30 years ago or something.
Oh, it was called Blade Runner.
Okay.
If you haven't seen Blade Runner.
The best sci-fi movie? I almost said money. The best sci-fi movie you think is Blade Runner?
If I was going to go pure sci-fi... I would say, yes, the best sci-fi movie is Blade Runner. There's been several other good ones. I think The Matrix is very good, and most people have seen that.
Yeah, Matrix is pretty...
It's called Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back.
That's not sci-fi fantasy.
Sci-fi fantasy.
It's not even sci-fi. There's nothing science fiction, really.
There's
no science in it.
Not Empire. No. When you get to those midichlorians, that's when you get the sci-fi.
Empire Strikes Back is the greatest Star Wars movie ever made, and it is one of the best movies ever made. But it's fantasy. It might as well just be knights and wizards and stuff.
Hey, but they don't have like frozen planets in fantasy, right? I mean,
if you have lasers, you're automatically sci-fi. It's a rule.
There you go.
That's a rule.
Sci-fi.
So you're like,
cool.
So Buck Rogers is Flash Gordon, sci-fi.
For anyone that's like, oh, but it doesn't follow any logical rules of physics, all of the rules of physics are at play there, just in its own galaxy. So like,
yeah.
Space has noises in their galaxy. Get over it.
Tim, I will give you this. It's fiction. At least it's half of it.
There we go.
All I can give you. But no, it's obviously a great movie. But if you're on pure science fiction, yeah. We have really gotten off topic.
Wow.
But
Welcome to the episode.
And 2001, I mean, obviously, that is the pinnacle. I think Blade Runner...
I have not seen any of these.
I personally find Blade Runner to be a more satisfying and rewatchable film than 2001. But 2001 is a Space Odyssey is obviously a pinnacle of science fiction as well.
So... We can't get into this. Patrick, we can't get into this.
No, we got to stop. All right, back to the game. Isaac, what would be your number two game?
Honestly, I have no idea because nothing else really stood out to me. I looked at the list of the games after, and I was like, okay, I'm not going to buy any of this, but maybe Cadence of Hyrule I will consider buying if it's on a sale. So okay. Honestly, nothing else really. Like when I watch these sort of things, it's a lot of like I said, I have very strict requirements when it comes to games, like what I really want to play. And a lot of these just didn't seem like all that interesting to me, honestly.
I'm surprised nothing can tan. All right, so, well, Tim, there's a couple of things I got. One, we reviewed Blaster Master Zero on this podcast, and we even had somebody from Inti Creates. I believe that was Matt Pappas, if I'm not mistaken. Came on from
a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, from Inti Creates to talk about Blaster Master Zero, which we all liked. I like Blaster Master Zero, and I'm considering picking up Blaster Master Zero 2. It is actually out right now, so that's kind of cool. But the other one, Pine, I thought maybe that's an open world kind of thing. That's pretty ambitious for an indie developer to do an open world game like that. And it looked like it could be somewhat appealing.
So this one looks... I saw this one and I just thought, oh, bad Skyrim.
Or something. Well, I mean, I'm sorry it doesn't have the $300 million budget.
I like, yes, but...
But it was probably made by like five people.
But then
yeah, five people working 20-hour days attempts to make fun of it.
I know, Tim just dismisses it.
I don't see it, a douche, but like... Sometimes I just see these ideas and they're just so grandiose and I'm like, this is probably like really, really ambitious for how many people you have on your team. But personally, it just like looked slow and awkward.
It did.
And like, if it ends up being really fun to play, then all is forgiven, right? Mm-hmm. But then you look at a game, Patrick, let's talk about your favorite game, Hollow Knight, real quick.
Yeah.
Like how many people have made Hollow Knight?
How many? Three people made the majority of Hollow Knight, and then you had a composer as well, and then maybe some other people thrown in here and there. But it was a three-man team for most of the game. And by the way, Nintendo themselves or any AAA studio would have been proud to have made Hollow Knight. It feels like a AAA game.
Exactly, because they stayed well within what was feasible for them, and they pushed boundaries within that. Like,
that's a good
point.
Don't
get me wrong. Like, look at how gorgeous that game looks.
It's amazing. It is. Absolutely stunning at times.
Because they
and the amount of detail they included though is just incredible.
Exactly.
Small details everywhere, touches everywhere that you only think that usually only big companies put in because they can afford to take the time to craft these things and make every world have its own little distinct things. You know, usually your indie developers that copy and paste assets and stuff like that. I mean, this does not feel that way. Hollow Knight. But Hollow Knight's... I consider Hollow Knight to be an incredible exception to the indie rule. I don't know how they've managed to do this, honestly. And then they're making a sequel that they're just giving to all the backers anyway. They had promised DLC to the backers of Hollow Knight. And then they took that DLC, and they had so many ideas that they decided to just make an entire full game sequel and... So those people are all getting that for free. I don't know how they could do this, but Hollow Knight's also done really well. It's sold somewhere near 3 million copies. So they've had a lot of success. But it is still it's an outlier, Tim. I consider them
anomaly. Yeah, okay. So let's take an older example.
Mulaka, I think, would be like a similar comparison to Pine. Like Mulaka?
Exactly. But couldn't that game have been... Better? I don't know.
Like, yeah, Mulaka it could have controlled better, but it still was fun. I liked Mulaka, and so that's why, you know, I see Pine and I'm like, well, I mean, it might work.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that everything has to be like 8-bit or anything, but just like knowing your limits can really help.
Yes.
If the game plays really well and is really fun to control, that's a big difference, and that'll make all the difference if the game's really fun.
Yes.
If it's plays like slow, awkward Skyrim, then
you're right, and that's always you. It's a very, very valid point when a lot of indie developers bite off more than they can chew, and then it turns into just kind of a jumbled mess of a game. Hollow Knight did not do that. Hollow Knight is one of the greatest games ever made.
Yeah, and the problem I feel like with Pine on the Switch is that it's a 3D engine, and I'm wondering how well an indie team to be able to optimize 3D performance on Switch.
It all depends where they came from. I don't know enough about the studio, but
I just think about the fact that AAA companies have a hard enough time optimizing their engines for Switch. I can imagine a poor indie trying to struggle to optimize a 3D game. It looked like it was running a decent clip in the trailer, but there seems to be some texture. Like, the textures are, like, really muddy in a couple spots. I'm picking, right?
Yeah. I mean, Mulaka looked like an N64 game at times, or played like one, right? Like, at many times. But I still had a good time in that game. It felt like a throwback, and that was fine. You know, we still play a lot of pixel games. Like, Turok just came out for the Switch.
I'm just thinking, not many people are nostalgic about that sort of chunky looking 3D, right?
Yeah.
And so I think like Tim has a good point. If you can, 2D is one of the things indie developers can do really good and put a lot of detail in. 3D is a very big jump,
very
and so
tough.
you end up with something that looks like a GameCube title, and that's not exactly what you want, right? In terms of, you don't want that sort of muddy texture work or poor animations, because animations are so much more important in 3D. They're important in 2D too, but like that. So much harder to do in 3D and everything. So just like I said, watching back through the trailer again, I'm like, I can see what he's talking about. It just looks kind of, eh.
It's something to be cautious about for sure. It's a very valid point that they, you know, whenever somebody does, an indie developer does a 3D game, you should always be cautious.
Look at the amount of detail and all the stuff that's going on in the screen in Double Fine's new game, Rad.
Yeah.
Like, way better understanding of what they can do, what they're capable of. It just looks more unique, more colorful. I'm kind of sad Rick's not here, because it's a kid with a bat, so I immediately was like, oh, they've got kind of like what's that game called? Why can't I think of it? Mother. Like a mother thing
Earthbound.
Going on here. Earthbound. Sorry.
Rick is screaming somewhere right now. Rad to me, I was going to pass that like that. I don't like to like go negative, but for Double Fine, who I consider to be a pretty creative studio, that it seemed really super bland to me. I was like, I mean, I've forgotten the look of Rad about 5 seconds after the trailer started playing. I don't know. I don't know what to say, but like that one just looked ultimately really, really blah for Double Fine. Maybe I just didn't see with all the craziness that they're bound to throw in it, and but it just didn't, didn't strike me as being creative in the slightest, especially for that studio, which is known for, you know, doing a lot of really interesting things.
It's giving me off a very budget Saturday morning cartoon vibe when I look at it. It's like, I don't find it very appealing at all.
But that's
from a personal perspective. I hate this art style, honestly.
Yeah, and there are people who love Double Fine games. I'm not exactly like a huge Double Fine fan, but I always find them to be at least imaginative. There are people who love the games, and who knows, that game might actually play better. They're obviously much more, you know, they're a very experienced studio, so I doubt they're just putting out shovelware. But that one did impress me. So that one got you, Tim? You liked the look of that one?
It's one of the ones that I can see actually being really, really cool. Yeah, I think they said it's a roguelike, which I don't normally go for.
Yeah, me.
But it looked... I liked the mutation concept. I liked that there seemed to be more than just a singular gameplay mechanic throughout the entire trailer. It looked like gameplay evolves as you play through, and I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how fun that is, how much of a power trip there is there, it could be really fun. But it also could be not shovelware, but also just kind of one of those there indies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to tell with some of these just from a small trailer. You can't really get a sense of the gameplay quite yet. We're gonna have to see more. You know, once their regular trailers hit the eShop, then you'll probably have a better idea. With all of these indie games, I think reviews are gonna be important, because none of them seemed right out of the box like they're gonna be hitting a solid double, triple, or definitely no home runs just from that direct. But, there's ones to keep an eye on, depending on who you are. And even the other games, none of them looked particularly bad or anything like that. Nothing looked bad. There was plenty of solid indies, just nothing to me, like, jumped off other than Red Lantern, just because of how dark it got. And the
because you love Balto, that's why.
Yeah. No,
was there?
No, wait, it was called like Iron something. Like that was the name of that movie that I was talking about. It was from the 90s.
Was there, Patrick? Was there a Cuba Gooding Jr. movie about dog sledding?
Yes, there was. I watched it as a kid. I do not remember the name of it, but yes, there was. And the dogs talked. Did they?
Oh wait, yes, Sled Dogs. It was called.
Yes.
No, yeah.
I didn't see that movie.
Yeah, I saw that. That was terrible.
No, that's not the one. Iron Will. That's the movie.
Yeah,
I'm talking
about. Isn't it a Disney?
It was a Disney movie from the
early
90s.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It was with the Sean Patrick Flannery, I think, maybe not Chris O'Donnell. Let me...
Yeah, I remember. I've
seen
it before.
Mackenzie Astin. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Sled Dog. I think Balto. But
no, I think of Iron Will. That was a great 90s movie. Balto, good lord. But
it's not, I never said it was good, but it's not. It was one of my favorite childhood movies that I wore the VHS tape out. Literally,
movies that my little brother liked. So it was there. Couldn't escape it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a lot to look forward to. I think, of course, there were some really, really big surprises again. Zelda is sort of in the hands of an indie developer. I'm really curious the future of Nintendo properties. Is Nintendo going to kind of open up? Are we going to get to see more of that? Hopefully. So maybe consider buying this game just to hear some remix Zelda songs and to encourage Nintendo. And also Cuphead, which is a game that I know I love, and you can now play it on the go anywhere. And I think that's a big selling point for a game like Cuphead. And plus, with those Joy-Cons, you immediately can grab another player and enjoy the company of Mugman and Cuphead. So before we get too distracted by terrible films and weird blasts from the past, let's take a totally different blast from the past, from the Wii days, and talk about Kirby a little bit, because Isaac, you've been playing an old Kirby game that's now on the 3DS.
Yes, yeah, so this is probably the last... I don't know if this is quite the last Nintendo-published game on 3DS, but it's one of the last ones, I know for sure. Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn on 3DS. So I reviewed this last week for the site, and it's a Kirby game. it's just like, for the most part, Kirby's Epic Yarn that came out on Wii in 2010. And so I have a kind of a history of this game. I rented the original Epic Yarn on Gamefly back on a free trial from Gamefly.
I remember Gamefly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's back in 2011 or 2012, and I played through it. Back then, I didn't like taking my time with games. So I was just bored to tears with this game. I finished it, you know, I was done with it. This time, I went into it with more of an open mind. And the more I look at it, the more I realize that this is the perfect example of a game that shows how much a developer has progressed. Okay, so this was one of the first Goodfield-developed Nintendo titles. And you can tell they're getting their feet wet in terms of the craft aesthetic and everything. Because if you look at this game and then you go back to playing something like Yoshi's Woolly World and Yoshi's Crafted World, you're like, oh my goodness, it's evident. Goodfield's texture work and their just environmental aesthetics have come a long way since Kirby's Epic Yarn. Because you look at Kirby's Epic Yarn, yeah, it looks cool because everybody's made out of yarn. But the way they're designed, a lot of the levels look kind of empty because these enemies are just outlines in yarn. Kirby's just an outline in yarn. There's no like... Yoshi made out of yarn that looks like really cute and like really well crafted with some really cool textures and those stray little pieces of yarn and everything. That's one of the biggest things about this game. It's very weird, very technical, but it's one of the biggest things you notice is that Goodfield was still trying to kind of figure out what they're doing with the craft aesthetic. The second thing is, if you're looking at picking up this game, I would totally not recommend this version on 3DS at all, and that's for a couple reasons. First of all, it runs at half the frame rate that it ran on Wii. So Wii, it ran at a silky smooth 60 FPS and at 480p. Here it's running at 240p at 30 FPS. And it's a Kirby game, so 30 FPS really doesn't matter that much. But that extra resolution really does, because on the tiny 3DS screen, I am playing on a 2DS XL, so it's probably one of the larger screens for the 3DS. It's just really cramped, and it doesn't pop at all. I feel like if this game would have had 3D, I know I don't have a 3DS, but if this game would have had 3D and I had a way to see it, it would have helped a lot with helping the game to pop out. Because this is, you know, Nintendo's kind of given up on 3D in general, and this game is one of those that they've given up with it on. This game is really, really easy, which is fine. It was easy on Wii, but they added some new craft abilities, some new hats that Kirby can wear that make this game a complete cakewalk. So, for example, there's this bird boss in the game that you're supposed to grab with your epic yarn and pull and do some different things to get damage on. Well, I walked in with the sword hat, so I just hit with the sword 3 times, and it was dead in about 20 seconds, which is completely breaking the original game. I have a feeling that whoever they got to port this would just threw some extra stuff in there and didn't really try to balance the rest of the game around it. And that's just obvious, because you can just hit any boss with this one of these sword abilities or whatever, and it just completely just destroys them.
Now, isn't there a hard mode, though, too?
There is devilish mode in this game. I had forgotten about that. Devilish mode is a lot of fun in this game. Because there's these little devils that fly around and try to get you. And this game is basically based around getting all the jewels in the level, because there's no way to die, right? There's no way you can fall off a cliff and you just get pushed back a little bit, but you lose all the jewels you're carrying. So devilish mode adds a bit of challenge because these little devils are chasing you the whole level. But if you're trying to get max medals on each level, which is something I would recommend, otherwise this game is way too short. It's about 4 hours if you rush through it. Really try to get the medals in each one of these levels. The little devils can help, because if you destroy them, you get a lot of jewels from doing that. And it actually makes the game at least somewhat challenging, because overall, this is probably one of the easiest games I've ever played. And that's not a bad thing, necessarily. It's great for kids. But if you're going to get this to enjoy with a kid, or to have maybe some kids enjoy playing it, I would really recommend picking up on Wii, because that mode has a two-player mode. It's on a bigger screen. This screen is just I can't overestimate how cramped it is. And I found that with a lot of Wii to 3DS ports, Donkey Kong Country Returns. I haven't played it, but I've seen some screenshots of Xenoblade Chronicles 3D. When you shrink down Wii titles to these tiny little screens, it can kind of cause us some problems with the porting process. But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad game. I enjoyed it. I gave it a 3 out of 5 stars. But it feels about 4 years late. This would have been one of those perfect games to have about 2015 or 2016 to plug in that hole in between the Wii U and the Switch. Now it just feels completely pointless when you've got Kirby Star Allies on Switch, and it just doesn't feel like there's any point in paying $40 for this when you can pick up that vastly superior four-player Kirby game on Switch.
Well, honestly, losing co-op's like a big deal, I think, because that was one of the big
things.
Because Tim, you played this with your wife, right? And
I love this game so much. Or the Wii one, I should say. I love it so much, and it's because like there's a big difference between single player, which is just too easy, and playing with someone, because then you're competing for absolutely everything.
Oh, I thought about that.
At any point, like grab the other person and throw them down a pit because you're just a monster. And it, like, some of the platforming later on gets way harder because there's only enough room for like one little Fluff and not Kirby and Prince Fluff. So it's way better with more people and way more challenging. Kind of like how Mario games are the same way. Like,
that's
some of the early Mario levels in a 2D Mario, it's like, oh, this is too easy. You throw in another player who you're really good friends with, and that's just going to be a douchebag Luigi, and it's going to make it so much harder, but so much more memorable for that. So I really love this game. Losing multiplayer, it just don't play it at that point, honestly.
Yeah, and on the 3DS, the controls are not that good at all. So they feel super mushy if you use the circle pad, because you have to double tap in order to run. So there's no run button, which I don't understand, because there's all these buttons that they don't use on the 3DS. Because originally you played this game on the Wii, where you held the Wii remote sideways, and I could understand why they didn't have a run button. But there should have been a run button on this version, because it feels super mushy. You end up Kirby ends up either jumping way too far or falling right off a cliff. And it's just super annoying when you run when you don't mean to and you don't run when you don't mean to. And I'm usually pretty good at platformers, but this one's just so frustrating because of that element. And there's all these timers, all these things you have to wait on a lot. And it's just like, wow, you know, I missed this timer, and now I've got to wait 10 seconds for the next, you know, platform to show up or whatever. And that can be a little frustrating, especially if you're trying to get through the levels in any sort of decent time. But if I was going to say, if you're going to play this game, either the original Wii version or this version, please just take your time. I had to go through this game quickly because I was reviewing it, and that's just not the way to play it. So take your time, get all the jewels, get the max level medals, go play all the optional levels and everything. I think it's a really enjoyable game, especially if you can play it with somebody in co-op, or if you can just, you know, maybe watch your kid play it or something. That is a really enjoyable experience. This would be a perfect first platformer for a kid or something. The inability to die, the relatively easy bosses and everything is just perfect. But for any sort of experienced platform gamer, I'd recommend definitely trying to go 100% it if you're going to try to play it. Or at least try to get as many as you can, right? Otherwise, This is definitely not worth what they're charging in terms of 40, because honestly, I did the math. For an extra $20, you can go buy a Wii and buy the original Epic Yarn, which is just like, you know, Wiis are like $40, Epic Yarn's like $15 on eBay. You got to buy both of those, get a pair of component cables, and then be playing it with your big screen, right? And then have a Wii to do all sorts of other stuff with. So, I mean, that's just makes no sense, in my opinion. But you know what? I understand they're trying to milk the 3DS what they can. This is probably a companion game for adults who got Star Allies on their Switch. This is probably for their kids on their 2DS, right? Here's another Kirby game you can play or something. But there's already better Kirby games that are cheaper on the 2DS itself too, or on the 3DS itself, right? There's Triple Deluxe, which is $20. There's Robobot, which is $40. Both of those are I haven't played them, but presumably from what I've heard, better games than this one.
We reviewed Robobot on the show, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I think it depends. I mean, Robobot's the better of the two. Triple Deluxe is fine. I mean, both those Kirby games are fine. They're all Kirby games are usually the same.
I think they've pretty much played one and played them all.
Epic Yarn, I just found to be a super relaxing, chill game. Even when you're going for 100%, like, I never got frustrated, and I think that's its value. It's not a Mario game. It's not a Donkey Kong game. It's not trying to be that. It falls more on. It is super easy, but it's also kind of super. It does have a lot of inventiveness, you know, and I'm basing this on the Wii version. I love the pulling the cloth, you know, to compress a stage or to unzip things and all that kind of stuff. I thought they had a lot of kind of cute ideas. It's a very, very cute game. Just one of those games that you can relax to. And I think the visuals, the aesthetics play a big part in that. So when you're saying that it's, you know, the frame rate's less, and then the resolution is also far less. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not interested in playing that thing other than on a big screen. I don't, you know, but for somebody who doesn't have the option, well, you just said if they don't, it's almost cheaper to, or it's almost just the same to go out and buy a Wii and this game. So who knows?
Yeah, and one final thing about this game. This game deserves an HD remake, I think, in terms of the art style and everything. I think that would have been the better option. But I can understand it's probably cheaper to port to 3DS, They probably make a little bit more money off that. But yeah, I mean, you just look at this and you look at the Yoshi games and you're like, wow, I'd like to see them try another crack at Kirby with all the experience they've gained through Yoshi's Woolly World and Yoshi's Crafted World.
Yeah, Kirby's Epic Yarn 2.
Yep.
Make it happen. Anyway, that does it for our show. We'll be back next week with more things. Nintendo, Isaac, thank you for being here. Where can we find you online?
You find me at Goomba Stomp. I don't do social media, so...
And there you are covering indie games, for better or worse.
Yeah, for two more weeks, and then I'm free from them. So I am happy.
He'll have
that,
done
so.
His time.
I will have my time in the indie circuit. I am gonna go back to because by that time that's done, it'll be time for Yoshi. So I'll be pretty happy.
That's right.
So soon, can't wait. Patrick, what about you? Where can we find you?
You can tell me whether you agree with me or not that The Empire Strikes Back is not a science fiction film, at Sorted Cinema on Twitter. I would love to hear about it. And what is your favorite science fiction film? Or what do you like from the Nintendo Direct? I don't care. You don't have to talk about movies. At Sorted Cinema, we talk about everything. But yeah, otherwise, just writing for Goomba Stomp.
And I am Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, MAISON, on Twitter. Check out my work on Goomba Stomp, my other show, Game Boys, and... why don't you do us a huge favor right now, if you're listening on your phone, if you're on the, I forget what it's called now, just Apple Podcasts or something like that. Nothing too memorable there. Just scroll down, give us a rating, give us some stars. Leave a comment if you really like us. Tell us something that we didn't know. I don't know. Have fun with it. But we'll be more back next week. Ricky D will be back, and we'll be talking about all things Nintendo. Isaac, thank you for bringing up that you can look forward to Yoshi very soon, amongst a bunch of other games coming to the Switch, indies and bigger titles alike. So keep it tuned to NXpress. Thanks again. Talk to you then.